Welcome in, everyone, to the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Be sure to give Ryer on YouTube a like and a subscribe. Check out all the fantastic content there, sporting content and otherwise, at Ryer on YouTube. The Talking Tide podcast coming at you, recapping that Southeastern Conference basketball tournament performance by the Alabama Crimson Tide in Nashville. Looking ahead to the NCAA tournament here as we record this podcast. And, of course, we'll take a look at Alabama football as well as spring practice moves on. Kalen DeBoer with some interesting remarks that we can dive into just today, as a matter of fact, as well. But, Travis, I guess we begin with a quick glance back at what Alabama did in Nashville. Managed to look really good and really bad in two short days, right?
Yeah, it was definitely. And look, you know, you go to Nashville and you beat Big Blue in Nashville in an SEC tournament, that typically checks the box of a good performance. But to turn around and look, we talked about Florida going into that SEC tournament. Not surprised at all that the Gators won the tournament, maybe a little surprised in the dominating fashion in which they rolled through some really good competition. But Florida is that team right now. To me, Florida kind of is right now who we thought Alabama was going to be right now. Kind of switched places over the course of the season. But Todd Golden's team's got it going on. It wasn't all bad for Alabama. Needed a win of any sorts there in that quarterfinal round. Looked really good in doing it. Against Kentucky, but then Florida, boy, just took the Crimson Tide apart. And understanding Grant Nelson goes out in the first half, but if you don't get more out of your guards at this time of year, really in any kind of game like that, whether you're talking the round of 32 coming up or beyond, you're going to probably have a tough time moving on.
Yeah, one take I took from it, Travis, I thought Alabama in the early part of the second half against Florida and Kentucky in the early part of the second half against Alabama, similarities, they both just went totally rat trap, right? Alabama managed to play itself completely out of the game against Florida in about 4 minutes, 4.5 minutes in the second half early, you know, coming out of halftime. I think Chris Youngblood buried a three for the first 3 points of the second half. And then from there, Florida goes 17-2 on that run. There was a ton of time left, but Alabama just looked so out of sorts, so disjointed, especially on offense, that you could kind of tell it was over early. And Kentucky pretty much did the same thing, right? I think Alabama had a little bit more comfortable lead at the half against Kentucky. I think Alabama was up 7 maybe at the half against Kentucky. But in the first 8-9 minutes of the second half, Kentucky was toast.
Yeah, Kentucky right now, well, a fully healthy Kentucky still isn't Florida. But especially with where Kentucky's at right now in terms of health and the losses that they've had, in year one under Mark Pope, from that perspective, they can't match up with a Florida. And Florida just does a great job, man, because they go deep too. They have the depth we thought Alabama had. They can legitimately come with another 5 and keep the pressure on. And that's what I sort of took from it. Florida was keeping the pressure on even in the first half. The lead was manageable at that point. Mm-hmm. But in the second half, they just kept the pressure on. And at some point, if Alabama didn't get hot from 3 without Grant Nelson on the floor, they had no chance in the second half. And they haven't been a good 3-point shooting team all year, which kind of leads to the question of going into the NCAA tournament. Do you think that can that switch flip on going into the NCAA tournament? Or do you feel like the ship has sailed on that? And it wouldn't be all that realistic to kind of hope even that could be the case.
Yeah, interesting that Todd Golden during the game was captured on the broadcast during a timeout. Not talking to a sideline reporter, but just talking to his players. Sometimes those mics will pick up what the coaches are saying, and Yeah, he said, I think our, he was telling his players in a huddle, I think our depth is going to wear these guys down. Then he went to the press conference after the game, said it again.
Yeah.
And yet this Alabama team, Travis, I think I've said it on here before, is as deep as any Alabama basketball team I can remember. But I guess with Grant Nelson out, maybe you're not quite as deep. And Florida has some players on the bench too. They just ground them down.
Yeah, and it seems like the first thing that seems to go for Alabama when that plays out is on the defensive end. You know, as you get worn down, the hardest thing to do is to guard when you're starting to get worn down. Not just physically, but mentally. You get tired of it. You get tired of trying to guard this team when they've got all these weapons. And Florida, it isn't just about individual talent and what they can do to you in one-on-ones. Obviously, Walter Clayton Jr., we all know. Tremendous player. Hell of a player. But their stuff, their system that they employ under Ty Golden, even if their best guys aren't getting off in those one-on-ones, they can count on their stuff to continue to get them open looks. And their guys are connected, man. You can tell that's a team, that's a group that likes playing with each other. Not saying the Alabama's guys don't, but they are very connected, not just on offense, but defensively. There's communication. You know, there is a connection there that you have to play team defense. I don't think Alabama's guys don't play hard. I know Nate keeps harping on that. We got to play harder. We got to play harder. I think relative to this group, they play hard. But they still don't have a guy that'll get in front of the basketball and stop downhill drives. You know, I hear all the comparisons to Herb Jones. And look, Mo Diabate, relative to this basketball team, he does. He's a great effort guy. Saw it even against Florida. He had a couple of offensive rebounds on some, you know, kickouts that ultimately led to a three there, I guess, in the first half. But they don't have a charge taker. I don't see one. Oh. They don't have a guy like Herb Jones, who would jump in front of a downhill driver
right,
and take one or take two or take three if that's what it required. And again, I don't think it's a question of playing hard. It's just having that kind of guy that you'd like to have this time of year.
And boy, does Florida crash the boards. My goodness. I mean, and they get their guard. I think they get their guards involved in the rebounding a little bit more than Alabama does. They're plus 8.2 for the year on rebounding margin. I think that's top 10 out of 355 schools. And they beat Tennessee on the boards even worse than they beat Alabama when they knocked off the Vols in the final. I think they hammered them on the boards.
And that, you know, where that hurts Alabama is they can't get out and run as effectively as they would like because you're having to send even your guards to the backboard because you're getting hammered on the glass. You're giving it up in terms of offensive rebounds. And, you know, you hoped Amori, Aiden Sherrill coming in, you know, would limit some of that. But I think it's more of a testament to Florida than even a detraction of Alabama because Florida has size pretty much across the board. Even guys that aren't 6'7" plus, they've got those guys that are 6'4", 6'5", and kind of like Chris Youngblood in terms of physical makeup.
What did you make of Nate's choice not to call timeout during that critical 7-17? He got some hell for that, of course, from fans on social media and elsewhere. I don't think it would have made a difference in the outcome, but I think he stoked the flames a little bit more in the post game.
Yeah,
when he
said, "What do you want to call timeout? Tell you to play harder?"
Yeah. Just no acknowledgement whatsoever that a timeout can snap momentum, I guess, right?
That's pretty much been Nate, though. Nate's not a bail you out guy. I think that's kind of how he looks at it. Like, don't look over here, you know, do something about it. You know who else was like that? You know who was notorious for that? Was Bob Knight. Bob Knight would never – he hated it. I'm sure Bob Knight viewed it as a sign of weakness. Right. Mm-hmm. We have to. The other team is telling me I have to take a timeout. And by God, nobody's dictating to me. And then also, it's kind of almost punishment for the players. They're like, Yeah, you're getting rolled right now. What's your response going to be to that? And to his point, it is a veteran team. What is he going to tell these guys? If it was a bunch of freshmen or first year guys, it would be one thing. Mark Sears played a lot of basketball. Right. You know, Jaren Stevenson, even at this point, has played a lot of important basketball. So I kind of get it from that perspective. But, yeah, you were just kind of waiting for that next media timeout to roll around because that was the only thing that was going to save the players at that point. If it wasn't going to be a media timeout, it wasn't going to be Nate banging one.
Looking ahead to the NCAA tournament, Travis, of course, Alabama enters as a number 2 seed with a record of 25-8. They got placed in the East region opening in Cleveland against Robert Morris. I guess to look ahead to the NCAA tournament, got to start with Grant Nelson, right? His status and what that means for this team. It sounds like he's questionable for Friday and maybe a little more hopeful for Sunday. But the way I've kind of read Oates over the years, I would say he's probably more doubtful for Friday, but we'll see.
Yeah, Nate's pretty transparent usually, even in situations like that. So if he isn't feeling 100% comfortable with saying, Grant's a go, it is still only as we do this on a Tuesday night. So there is time, but it is the early game on Friday. Look, it's Robert Morris. Great season for those guys. But this should be more about Alabama than it is Robert Morris. Not that you look at this Alabama team going into the tournament and feeling like you can really take much for granted. But even if Nelson can't go or is just held out against Robert Morris on Friday, you got to be able to take care of business up in Cleveland in round one. Now you get the Sunday. Okay. Kind of get that. And the Friday Sunday does help Nelson, you would think. Gives him more time, even if it isn't Friday. Sunday would seem more realistic.
Probably if Nelson is limited or outright unavailable, pretty good timing for maybe Darion Reed to be ready to take on a little bit more of a workload, which after a week being, managed with his injury that's lingered through most of the SEC season. He played a little bit in the SEC tournament. If Darion Reed could give him, it doesn't have to be 25 or 30 minutes to replace Nelson, but if he could just give him 15 good minutes, that would help if Nelson's not a go.
Yeah, and look, they've got size. I mean, Jaren Stevenson, Amori, Sherelle, come on. It's not like you're going to be stuck playing, four or five guards on the floor together. So you've got some size. You should be able to still have that advantage against a team like Robert Morris, even if Grant Nelson ends up not able to go or doesn't go in that game. So, yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be as much of an issue really in the first two rounds. I don't think Vanderbilt is really a team that's built that way. They actually, I think, like to play kind of like Alabama likes to play. So, we talked about it. Everybody gets hung up on one seed, one seed, one seed. I like what Alabama got as a 2 seed. I thought the draw was about as favorable as you could have hoped for. You're a 2 seed, and you're not a 2 seed to a 1 seed from the SEC. Mm-hmm. And also, I didn't think you wanted St. John's and Rick Pitino in your bracket.
Right.
If you could help it. Now, St. John's going to be a 2. I thought Florida kind of got the short end of the stick on that deal with the Johnnies in their region there as the 2.
Mark Sears, a topic of discussion going into this NCAA tournament as well. Travis, a little cold lately from three-point range. I think he's made only 4 out of his last 24. Maybe it's 26 in his last 4 games. Your thoughts on how that might or might not impact things in this tournament early on?
It's crazy, isn't it? Because the guy today is named a first-team AP All-American. And you're wondering about him a little bit going to the NCAA tournament. I don't know your thoughts on this. This feels like a situation, not that he hasn't had a really good year. This almost feels like one of those retro awards, maybe from last year or something. But he's certainly capable. And look, they need Filon to be a lot better than he was against Florida, certainly. Holloway, that sort of triumvirate of those three guards in a lot of ways to go along with Chris Youngblood, going to hold the keys to however far, Chase, I think anyway, this team goes. Not sure about you, but yeah, he's your guy, you know. And look, in the tournament last year, you had three or four guys that stepped forward. And really, other than Estrada from last year, they're all still there, right? Mm-hmm. Mo Diabate, Mark Sears, Jaren Stevenson, Grant Nelson, you would think. So you're kind of sitting here in the position you wanted to be in, but it's a little bit odd that we're having a discussion about can certain guys turn it on at this time of year.
Filon, like you said, is huge. He really looked the part against Kentucky, really did. And, of course, not nearly as good or effective against the Gators. But I think against Kentucky, to me, he kind of flashed like that potential into the first round NBA pick that people are saying he might be. Yeah. Potentially a one-and-done guy. So
he's the kind of guy that I don't think he has to hit a lot of threes, but, man, if he can knock down one or two open threes mm-hmm. in a game, it can change a lot for them. And then they maybe aren't as dependent on Sears to give them, you know, a whole lot. And, right. you know, Filon kind of reminds me of Bobby Hurley going back a ways. When Bobby Hurley got to the point at Duke where he could knock down the open three, that took Duke to another level. Filon, you know, it's a confidence thing with him sometimes too. And what you don't want him doing is turning down the open threes and then kind of not having a plan, going off the dribble. And that's when you see him turn it over. When he goes to the basket and you can kind of tell he doesn't have a plan, that's when he has a problem.
Yeah. You like Sears as the penetrator, right? He's the one that can get to the rim and make better reads. I don't think there's any question about that. Filing more effective at the rim as a shooter than a passer, I think.
Yeah. Well, he's creative. Yeah. In the paint. He can score a lot of different ways in the paint. And I like that. You know, look, Filon isn't always great, as we talked about, but he isn't afraid either. And you're kind of where you are now at this point. And I agree. You got to roll with him and hope his best basketball, his most consistent basketball, is coming up over the next two or three weekends.
Aiden Holloway, big two, the sharpshooter transfer from Auburn. Travis, he's run a little hot and cold. What I like about Holloway maybe more than anything is how quick he gets that thing off. Yeah. He does not need a lot of space at all.
Youngblood too. Youngblood, it hits the pocket and it goes pretty quick.
Yep. So, you know, those two huge.
Look, all these guys, the ball looks good coming out of their hands, good bread, mm-hmm. you know, it just doesn't always look good when it gets to the cylinder, you know.
SEC, we'll expand out in our discussion here, Travis, beyond just Alabama. What about the SEC breaking the record for 14 schools invited from one conference? Not just shattered that record. The record had been 11. I guess South Carolina, LSU, the only squad. Yeah.
It kind of looked like SEC baseball, you know, getting into regionals is what it looked like. It's really crazy. I thought 13 were pretty safe. I
don't know about you. Did you? I thought Texas was out. I didn't expect.
Yeah, I didn't see Texas getting in. No, but there they are. Yeah.
What about the Heels getting in?
You know,
as a Duke guy, I would think you would have a thought or two.
Yeah,
about that
as a keen Duke observer through the years. That brand didn't hurt, you got to think. And I love the argument. They were 1-11 in quad one games, but they came back and said, but we were 8-0 against quad two.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, look, you know, West Virginia fans pretty upset. Not only that, West Virginia doesn't get in, and now their coach is going to IU.
Yeah. You got a little NIT bedlam too, Travis. What about the South Alabama Jaguars getting snubbed in some kind of awful snafu there? An embarrassment for the NIT.
Yeah, but can you really embarrass NIT? Yeah, it's not. Right. You got to be relevant, right, to be embarrassed. But no, I mean, you hate that for USA. That's pretty rough. Although I'll say this, I've been around some basketball players in the past who came up short of, say, the NCAA tournament. And boy, the last thing they wanted was that NIT type of bid,
right?
Especially if their schools were going to be on spring break, you know?
Right.
Coach is like, yay, we're going to NIT. And you're like, no, I was going to Cabo, but right. Now I am not.
You know, Daytona, at least.
But, you know, you would think USA, they knew they weren't getting in the NCAA tournament, so it wasn't that sort of dynamic for them. I'm sure they were probably pretty excited.
No doubt. All right, the Talking Tide podcast, you can catch it on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Be sure to give that a like and a subscribe here and now. Travis, we'll turn to a little bit of football before we close out this edition of Talking Tide. Alabama back on the practice field, of course, as they steam towards 8A, I think on April 12th. Kalen DeBoer speaking earlier today to reporters, asked about the running backs, the OL, the wide receivers. He kind of ran the gamut on offense, at least. And, you know, some interesting – the one thing he mentioned that was that caught my ear a little bit is that Ryan Williams might be suited for a little slot action. Mm-hmm.
I know you asked about Cole Adams.
Yeah.
And he gave a pretty expansive, interesting answer, didn't he?
He slipped that in on Ryan in response to how Cole Adams was doing. So interesting for sure. Felt like with Isaiah Horton coming in and Jalen Hale coming back, they were maybe a little longer on the outside and had maybe the flexibility to work Ryan Williams some inside. Although, and look, I have no doubt that Ryan Williams could be a dynamite guy in the slot. He's got so much quickness. Mm-hmm. He can get open on nickelbacks left and right in that role, but the guy's got such just straight out downfield speed and so much ball judgment, right? I mean, ball the way skills, we saw him get those 50-50 balls deep down the field, to me, if he can play some slot, fantastic, get him in there some, but you got to keep that guy on the outside too, the way he can go downfield and get it 40-50 yards deep.
Yeah, I agree. And look, it sort of lines up with what we've seen for a few years now, that these offensive coordinators, they have really figured out ways to get their number one on a number three corner or a number three safety. And that's really what it goes back to in terms of those type of matchups with moving Williams around. Also helps your other guys too, potentially. You saw it with Lane Kiffin at Alabama. Remember what he did with Amari Cooper in 2014? Yeah. I think the first play of the Tennessee game in 2014 in Knoxville, I want to say Lane had Amari lined up almost like an H-back, and he ran that sort of scissors slice action back across, and he just had it dumped. Had Blake Sims just dump it in the flat to Amari, and I think Amari went like 75 yards, maybe the first play of the game up there. So, yeah, that's been a kind of growing trend, but it is fascinating to consider the possibilities. And look, it's all about those explosive plays. Now, if it's third and seven, Cole Adams in there, you know, you're trying to sort of convert on third down. He's definitely going to be that kind of guy, but they're going to have some potential for some really, really interesting personnel groupings, assuming Jalen Hale continues to trend in the right way and Horton coming on board. And, you know, what does Mbakwe bring to that mix and how quickly can he do it?
Right. Right. On the defensive side of the ball, Travis, I think, you know, you look up front, there's some reason for excitement. LT Overton, obviously taking the next step would be huge for this defensive line. Guy that got a whole lot of pressure last season, just not a ton of finishes. We've touched on that on the podcast once or twice here in recent weeks. Finding that pass rusher from a linebacker spot on the edge, big too. Big.
Is Quay Rousseau ready, you know, to give you more of that, right? Off the edge. And they like to get multiple in how they get pressure. And you know, I think the secondary is going to be fascinating too, because it wasn't the intended result, but because of the injuries at safety, we saw guys like Bray Hubbard really come on throughout the season. Tough to be a safety in that defense, though, because that, as we talked about last season, during the season, they don't play dime. You know, there's no six defensive backs.
Right.
So if you're like the fourth safety, you know, if you're the third safety, it's probably you're in a good spot at that right. Husky position, or maybe the third corner, depending on how they go there. But man, if you're a third corner or a fourth safety, potentially, that can be a tough spot. But you know, I just look at their roster and I look at Alabama's roster and still think this has the makings of a college football playoff team. Now, you know, where I continue to go back to is offensive tackle. And I know Kalen talked about that relatively in depth today too, with Wilcomb Formby making some nice strides in the strength and conditioning program. We know Caden Proctor isn't much of a factor at all. This spring they went to the portal to try to address that some as well. To me, if they can get tackle to above serviceable, right. You know, then offensively, I think the pieces are in place to do some big things.
Yeah. Right tackle, especially right tackle. You're right. Was Proctor out for the spring? They're really kind of thin at both tackle spots. I don't think there's any question about it. Looking ahead to the fall, if Proctor's back and healthy on the left side, they should be fine. But the right tackle spot's been a sore spot for a couple seasons or more now. And so that'll be worth watching for sure. Whether or not Wilcomb Formby can nail that down will be certainly important. And they brought in some transfers as well. On the interior, you got Cam Dewberry working in there from Texas A&M and an offensive guard spot. Be interesting to see if he can make some noise. Vandermark obviously working at both guard and center. So a lot of moving parts on that offensive line. I agree with you though. That's the key to the whole team.
What are your thoughts on, it hadn't been as much talk about Dre Washington, I guess, coming in as a transfer running back first. Did it surprise you, because we didn't talk about this at the time that it happened, did it surprise you that they took a back out of the portal, even, I guess, with Justice Haynes moving on to Michigan, some of the attrition that they had with this football team, and then to go with a really veteran back, even though they bring back Jam Miller, Richard Young, there's going to be some growing expectations for him. They had a couple of freshmen last year. They bring in A.K. Deer, maybe the top running back prospect in the 2025 cycle. What are your thoughts on that?
They dared somebody to transfer. They really did. I mean, when you bring back your top guy and you lose your two and you go to the portal to get some, that tells everybody other than the one that – it's go time on the practice field, or it's go time in the portal, right?
And it kind of flew in the face of maybe this perception that the running back position, whereas value of it in the NFL and with certain teams in college football isn't what it is at other places. There's obviously still value for this staff at the running back position, because if there wasn't, they wouldn't even have bothered with the portal. They just said, look, we're bringing in A.K. Deer. We got these young backs we had last year. We got Jam back. We're good. But that wasn't the approach they took.
Real quick, before we close things out here on Talking Tide, Travis, what's the percentage, I'm going to put you on the spot here, percentage likelihood that Jalen Milroe runs a 40-yard dash at Pro Day on Wednesday at Alabama, coming on tap? With the understanding, of course, for our listeners who don't know, he did not run at the combine. He didn't do anything at the combine except throw.
He's got to run.
Got to run.
He's got to run Wednesday.
Yeah.
I mean, he's crazy if he does. He's not a first-round guy right now, is he?
It's real bad agent advice, and I've written this in the T News once or twice. If
he's got to do everything,
not to run at all, because the guys who don't do anything at the combine or pro day, what they're telling teams is, I'm standing on tape. Jalen don't want to stand on tape. Jalen wants to stand on what he can do athletically.
But the thing is about that, is that the one thing I think NFL teams feel very confident in is that he can run. So really,
sure he can. Yeah.
What does it really matter if he runs? They already know he can run. They already know relative to that position, he is an elite runner in terms of speed. I think he's got to throw, obviously. I think that's the bigger question. So I would actually be more surprised, probably you would be too, if he didn't throw at his pro.
Yeah, he'll throw. Yeah, I would imagine he'll throw.
He's going to throw.
Always fun to see who catches those balls too, right? Yeah. Is it Ryan Williams and Jeremy Bernard? It's got to be those two.
Lots of Brooks catching those balls out there. The next Jalen Waddle. Lots of Brooks. Just wait. Yeah. Just hide and watch. When do you head out for the land?
I will head to Cleveland on Thursday. Of course, they tip off on Friday. Off the top of my head, I can't remember what time I'm getting out of there Thursday, but going to try to catch that Rock and Roll Hall of Fame if I can while I'm out there.
That's got to happen. Yeah. I don't know the hours. I don't know what your schedule looks like.
Well, Saturday. Yeah, that's going to be the best shot.
Being a music aficionado like you are and I am, I had the chance to catch it years and years ago. It's got to be even way better now. But you got to go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Good bread.
Got to. You know? Got to. And I checked it out online today. Tickets are not that bad. They're like $25 or $35, yeah. Something like that. And
you can spend a few hours in there. Easy.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. They like you to actually kind of book an appointment time online, right? It's almost like reserving a table online at a restaurant. They want to know what time you're going to show up.
Yeah.
And I would imagine. And when I went on there yesterday, or actually earlier today, it was totally wide open for this Saturday. I imagine with the tournament being what it is, some of those appointment times are going to fill up on me. So I guess I better hurry up maybe.
Yeah. You need to be, you need to go ahead and get your time slot there, you know? And I would think, what's the weather looking like in the land for the weekend? Do we know?
I hadn't checked it yet. Although I get reports. Having never been to Cleveland before, I did check with somebody earlier today who has been to Cleveland quite a bit, and they warned of that wind whipping off Lake Erie. Travis.
Yes, yes. I've been in the winter to Cleveland, and it was snowing sideways coming off that lake. I mean, I'm a fan of the Rust Belt cities, though, so they get a lot of grief. The Chicagos, the Clevelands, the Detroits. Went to Buffalo this past football season. Now Buffalo, but I love those towns. So, you know, I'm guessing you're going to have a good time. Good bread. And here's to you staying up there for a few days, not being back on Saturday.
Looking forward to what I hope will be a longer trip. Going to be tougher to get to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame if Alabama's one and done, but I certainly expect him to at the least be playing
now,
on Sunday.
Hang with me here. You've got Robert Morris, and it's a school from Pennsylvania playing Alabama, a school from Alabama at a venue in Ohio. You know what you had tonight, right? In these first four games, you had St. Francis of Pennsylvania University taking on Alabama State and Alabama, and they played where? Dayton, Ohio.
About that, yeah.
Now, where am I going with all this? I don't know.
I was about to say. But
I thought it sounded pretty cool right up until it got to, well, Alabama State won anyway, which Alabama should win.
Pretty clever.
Should win on Friday.
Yeah, going to be fun. Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. I want to thank our listeners and viewers who have been with us for a long time. We might be coming up on a decade doing this podcast now, Travis. Yeah. Been a while. Enjoy it. Really enjoy it as always. A lot of different iterations and platforms, et cetera. But we've managed
the business side of it.
We'll see you next time. For Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread of the Tuscaloosa News. We'll catch you around the corner on Talking Tide.